their tongues to deceive. The venom of snakes is under their lips. Their mouths are full of bitterness and curses. And in their paths, nothing but ruin and misery. And the fear of God is not before their eyes. They have taken the hearts and minds of our leaders. They have recruited the rich and the powerful. And they have blinded us to the truth. Our human spirit is corrupted. Why do we worship greed? Because outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners. Our owners. They have us. They control us. They are our masters. Wake up. They're all about you, all around you.
Easy to apply nails, recolored in seven luscious hues. Just...
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Oh, goddamn hacker, that second damn night that asshole's cut in.
The movement was begun 8 months ago by a small group of scientists who discovered, quite by accident, these signals being sent through town.
He's giving me a headache.
Yeah, tell me about it. Must took the hackers months to figure out how to do this.
The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices. Their intention to rule rests with the annihilation of consciousness. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. Please understand, they are safe as long as they are not discovered. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
To question authority is to be somehow unpatriotic, un-American, and in league with terrorists worldwide. Fuck you! If they come for your freedom, you must not only resist, you must strike back with a vengeance that will stun them. On this front, if your anger and outrage are not at the forefront, then you're already dead. Dead to me anyway. Fuck these cowards, these traitors, these enemies of democracy.
So let's
They call me deranged. The hope is that they are right. It is of no greater or lesser import for another fool to wander the earth. But if I am right, and science is wrong, then may the Lord God have mercy on mankind. These are the words of Victor Schauberger, a man born over 100 years ago into his role as a guardian of the earth. Among the magnificent Austrian forests, he grew up wanting only to become a forest warden like his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and his father before him. But life was to take Victor far from the peace and solitude of great mountains and forests. Instead, he was to lead the struggle to preserve the earth, the forests and rivers, attacking the exploitation of nature as early as the 1920s. Nature was his teacher. Through an understanding of nature's principles, seen in the flowing motion of water, he gave the world a vision of how technology could be transformed to render free, non-polluting energy for our use. He warned of the consequences facing humanity if the present death-oriented technology continues. He died, betrayed by the same powers who promised to make his dreams a reality. Commercial gangsters who take all and give nothing back to the world.
Hello, I know there's someone out there who can understand and who's feeling the same way as me. I'm 24 and I've got everything to live for, but I know now that it wasn't meant to be. All has been lost and all has been won, and there's nothing left for us to say. But now I know that I don't want to be alone today. So if you find that you've been feeling just the same, come in now, it's alright.
Yeah. Well, most of us realize by now that our country is being quickly contaminated with many, many contaminants like metal. And these heavy metals get in the food and they clog up the veins, and this stops the circulation of the blood, slows it down, and this leads to mental problems, mental deficiency, a lack of mental acuity. Heavy metals destroy brain and nerve cells, and they inhibit enzymes, result in depressed chemical reactions that result in lowered energy, missing amino acids and reduced hormones, and they encourage the transmutation of other elements into themselves and increase the level of toxicity, and they're present every bite we eat, every drink we swallow, and every breath we breathe, he maintains.
Everywhere I go, everywhere I travel, I see people. The whole planet is full of them. Some walk alone, some with a companion, and others go about in groups. Human beings is the name they go by, and they sure love to live huddled together in big, sprawling cities. They all seem very busy doing this and that and getting on with their lives. Yep, the people of the world tend to look very productive and in charge. If I went and talked to any of them, if I went and interviewed people and asked each of them whether they think they're in charge of their own destinies, I wonder what kind of answers I'd get. Most of them would confidently say, sure, I'm in charge of my own life path. And what about me? Am I really in charge of my own destiny? Do I know where I've come from, why I'm here, and where I'm going? After all, some people would say that just by using this credit card, I'm a virtual serf to powerful men who profit from my existence. Some have said we're all veritable slaves in an invisible penitentiary. If that's the case, then none of us are in charge of our lives. We only think we are. And that's kind of frightening. Maybe that invisible prison does exist. Maybe I can't see it because I've been trained not to be able to see it. Can that situation never change? After all, I sure don't like to think of myself as being on someone else's chain. I think it's time to investigate these matters. When in doubt, find out. That's the key. There are those who've looked into these matters long before my time. What did they have to say? That's what I'd like to know.
So it says here, there's an interesting caption, says, here stands the new man. His conception of reality is a dance of electronic images fired into his forebrain, a gossamer construction of his masters designed so that he will not under any circumstances perceive the actual or the real. His happiness is delivered to him through a tube or an electronic connection. His god lurks behind an electronic curtain. And when the curtain is pulled away, we find the CIA sorcerer and the media manipulator. Jim Keith, Mind Control, Mass Control, just one of the fine books on, you know, the manipulation of consciousness that he did before he sadly basically was killed, you know. It's he was one of the people, I think, one of few who understood that the real war is a war on consciousness. It's very important to always remember that it may have so many other permutations. Now we're seeing it's, you know, mass killings in America or what have you. But and then all heads turn, you know, as soon as that comes on the little media framed image, you know, then people are shocked, you know, and they turn to that as if it's some sort of freak phenomena or something like that. It's actually, the sad case is it's not freak. And anyone who's really studied mind control understands that mind control is ubiquitous. It's almost the question of who is not mind controlled as opposed to, you know, who is mind controlled. It's just a difference in degree. The whole question of what is consciousness and how it can be manipulated is one of the most crucial questions of our time. In my work, it really goes along with the whole question of the origins of evil. I mean, it's origins of evil / war on consciousness and the whole manipulation of man's thinking, his behavior, his biology. And this question has distinguished some of the greatest scholars in the world, people like Wilhelm Reich. But in a more modern context, even people like Alex Constantine, Jim Keefe, you know, Jim Mars to a certain extent has gone into this.
Well, you know, in ancient times they used the sword and they used the gun and they used other methods like religion for pushing the populace around and getting people to do what was wanted. But in recent times, in the 20th century, there are new technologies that provide the expertise to control people totally without their knowledge. Means of electronic entrainment, brain control implants, methods of advertising that manipulate us against our will. And this isn't science fiction. This is something that's very documented.
The Manchurian Candidate, of course, was about the creation of a mind-controlled assassin who, as I recollect, it's been years since I've seen the film, was going to be activated to kill the president. Now, this is wild science fiction, crazy impossibility, complete nuttiness. But then one takes into consideration the realization that Sirhan Sirhan, right, for instance, after he killed Robert F. Kennedy, was examined by several experts, several hypnotherapists, and they came to the conclusion that Sirhan was under hypnotic control when he killed Kennedy. They don't make a big deal out of that on 60 Minutes, but that just happens to be the fact.
There's been others who've theorized, you know, Fritz Springmar has done some fantastic work on the manipulation of the human brain through technotronic means. It's weaponry, psychic weaponry, radiotronic weaponry that's being used, ELF waves, all sorts of different technologies that are patented. People can go and find out about it, research it, discover it. If you're coming from the world of Ted Gunderson and John DeCamp, you know, we even find out that families who are connected to secret agencies or maybe who've been communist spies or who've been part of the Nazi network who have found homes in America, people who are connected to Operation Paperclip and to the NSA, you know, there's histories of them selling their own children into, you know, mind control experiments. Amazingly, people in the military, this is a documented, known fact. Just unbelievable to think of it, you know. But the most important thing is always to remember that there is this kind of war going on, even though, you know, you may not realize it. And also to realize that there's also the cover-up campaign against mind control. You know, the people who are perpetrating this, who are putting these sleepers out there, who are planning assassinations, who are behind, you know, Sirhan Sirhan, all the way up through Son of Sam and Mark Hinckley, David Chapman. The list is endless, you know, when you start thinking about it. Jim Jones, this has all been exposed as sort of mind control based cults. But the fact is they don't want the average person realizing this. You know, there's the mind control concept or experimentation, and then there's the smokescreen as well. So you're dealing with two different things here. You're dealing with the fact itself, which is a very interesting study, but then you have all the rebuttal and the general ubiquitous consensus that, oh, no, there's no such thing at all. It's the lone gunman. It's the lone nut, you know, or disgruntled teens, you know, when it comes to Colin Bean and some of these others, just teens gone out of control. Okay, teens going out of control is one thing. Teens with automatic weapons that you can only find from, you know, government agencies and military camps is another. You know, and you track back and you find that the history of these people being connected to some of these orgs and institutions and military establishments. You know, David Berkowitz has revealed a great deal from prison about that and the elaborate Luciferian satanic networks that work with mind control on all its levels, all and tying into the military establishment. This has been thoroughly documented.
In 1993, announced that the entire spree was engineered by a satanic cult and others had participated in the plot.
Of course, everyone had played a role as far as the chanting and the praying. Everyone had a role in that and understanding that, you know, this was going to be another sacrifice to our gods. Bunch of scumbags that they were, our gods, Lucifer and his crew, and we said, yeah, this is going to be another one for you, you know. And I said,
basically what I was saying to Rumsfeld is, why don't you bring your company into the same framework that all these other companies have agreed to be a part of? And we had a very good, very full and frank exchange. His scientists kept jumping up and running around the room and saying, there's no problem, there's no problem, there's no problem. Ultimately, he made the decision not to find out what the facts were, but to move forward on the limited record that they had before them. And I believe it was a decision that was made that said, we can accomplish our ends better legally and politically than we can by actually doing the science to determine the outcome of the questions that are being asked. And in my mind, that demonstrated that he was an individual not interested in facts, not interested in the truth, not interested in finding out what the fundamental realities are, but much, much more interested in setting a goal and then by will and force pulling all the resources that he could possibly pull together to achieve that goal, i.e. get NutraSweet on the market and sold.
So let's look at the New World Order and what it has in store for you and your family. And I assure you, my friends, it is nothing less than total enslavement. We'll look at the type of cashless society control grid they're putting in, the destruction of the Bill of Rights and Constitution in America, the disarmament of the people, the end of national sovereignty, the militarization of police, and yes, the concentration camps that are a fact, not rumor, but fact. The documentation begins, the rumors end right here on this show today. Here are some clips of world leaders and political pundits calling for a new world order. And you'll also see a clip at the Council on Foreign Relations just days after September 11, 2001, where Gary Hart says we need to use this disaster to get a new world order. Again, using crises, many times crises the government engineers to scare the people into accepting tyranny, the new world order, and total enslavement.
Bill, you've heard an awful lot of dramatic speeches and seen dramatic moments in times of great gravity for the nation. How would you assess this evening?
Well, first of all, notice that he is hugging the majority leader, a Democrat of the United States Senate, Tom Daschle, within a clear display of bipartisanship. This was a stirring address, in my view, shorter than his father's speech when he announced the New World Order.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The soldiers that you see before you represent not the past, but rather the future. It is through exercises such as this that truly we can create a new world order.
And Americans are brilliant at many things, not least of which is turning lemons into lemonade. There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once and hasn't been used since, and that is a new world order. Think about this.
Let's first look a little bit closer at the new world order and its system. By the turn of the 21st century, one could no longer ignore the fact that we were living inside a new world order. The question is, what degree of global tyranny, what degree of dehumanization and total enslavement will you accept? A headline in MSNBC read, "Is this the new world order?" The New York Times went further with the headline, "Nations seek world order centered on UN, not US." They continued to say that the EU leaders had a meeting that was saturated with a commitment to what may be viewed as a form of world government, the supervision of countries by an international civil service bureaucracy whose headquarters is the United Nations. We're talking about a global tax, a global court where there are no juries, where you cannot face your accuser, where you're guilty until proven innocent, where the judge and the prosecutor sit on the same side of the bench working together. And inside this new world order, there's no room for freedom. But still, the man on the street may deny that there even is a world government. And that's really, well, the devil's biggest trick, isn't it? As they say, convincing the world that he doesn't exist. Well, the new world order's certainly done the same thing. It's like a deer who's stunned in the headlights, who just hesitates a moment and is smashed into a bloody pulp. Another headline in Salon magazine read, "Europe's New World Order," and began to try to create this illusion that, oh, there's a choice between what type of New World Order you want to live in. You see, the globalist social architects and engineers, the propaganda masters, know that they can no longer keep the existence of this world government from you. So they're saying, okay, there is a world government, but there's a left-wing world government and a right-wing world government, and you have a choice, world. What type of world government do you want? Who's going to control the new world order? And they completely bypass any discussion of, hey, we don't want a new world order. We want to keep our rights, keep our freedoms, keep our heritage, keep our nationalism. So think about that. 5 years ago, there isn't a new world order. You're a kook to talk about it. You shouldn't get involved in it. You shouldn't discuss it. It doesn't exist. You're crazy if you think it exists. And now, oh yeah, there's a new world order, world government. But okay, folks, what type of world government do you want? Now that's just on the surface. There is no left-wing or right-wing world government. It was founded and chartered by the military-industrial complex in San Francisco in 1945. It is nothing but a debaters club to basically steer and control the third world. The UN plays the good cop in military affairs, while the former Soviet Union and the United States play bad cop as the global government is expanded. Now you see the EU, the Pan-American Union, and the Asian Union that were formed decades ago merging their currency systems and their laws. And still, the average American, the average European, the average Asian has no idea that this system has already taken control of their lives. A lengthy 31-page report in the national newspaper of Australia, the Sydney Morning Herald, read, Manifesto for World Dictatorship. And in the article, they call for a liberal world government controlled by the United Nations and announce that the bad cop is America running the fascistic world domination racket. But if you inspect the IMF, the World Bank, the finances and controls, the UN, the central banks of nations around the world, you look at the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, it's all funded, shared, and run by a tiny cabal of high-level bureaucrats that serve the international banking elite that also owns the military-industrial complex. So again, they've spun the debate to what type of new world order will you have? The UN and the World Council of Churches has been calling and writing the textbooks for a one-world religion, billing that as the only hope for world peace. Meanwhile, the global government finances and runs and provocateurs almost every known terror organization on the face of the planet. There are countless other headlines drilling it into our heads that there's some type of transatlantic battle over the shape of the New World Order. Again, sucking you into phony debates to make you think you have input on this process if you'll just accept the New World Order. But what will it be like living under the New World Order? A United Press International headline read, Israel to kill in U.S. and allied nations. The FBI didn't have any comment about it. Ariel Sharon says that, yes, he'll kill citizens of America or any other country wherever he wants, including the United States. And our government, the federal government, has signed agreements with the EU to extradite American citizens for things that aren't even crimes here. Thought crimes, namely criticizing the EU or any of their policies, is now considered xenophobic. Imagine foreign Mossad and Interpol agents murdering Americans. No judge, no jury, no arrest. You're just dead, and it's in the back of the newspaper. That, my friends, is what it'll be like living inside the New World Order, and it's happening right now. We see CEOs, we see leaders from Mexico, the U.S., Canada, Chile, calling for getting rid of our borders, merging our social security systems and our police and military. Deals have already been signed in late 2002 for, quote, Mexican and Canadian troops to deal with American terrorists and for peacekeeping. My friends, peacekeeping is the disarmament and enslavement of the people. The New World Order also allows European Union-controlled and financed corporations to buy up critical government services like waste, water, and electricity. Privatization isn't private at all. It is simply a partnership between select corporations that act more like organized crime rings or modern pirates allied with government, bringing you this tyranny. An important area of New World Order documents, because the globalists communicate with each other on a routine basis, and their writings are public, though they're not distributed widely or talked about in the mainstream-controlled press that is there to distract our attention away from issues of real substance. The Project for a New American Century, founded in 1997, was run by Dick Cheney, Jeb Bush, Wolfowitz, and, of course, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. And the Project for a New American Century called for a New World Order in its writings that can be viewed at their website. They said that there needed to be a, quote, Pearl Harbor event to speed up the New World Order and to get the American people behind a national draft and behind a war of aggression against 62 countries, a war that Bush has said will last generations. In fact, in one statement, he said 100 plus years. They went on to say that Saddam Hussein, this is in a 2000 dossier they wrote up, a 2,000-barrel plan, that Saddam Hussein wasn't a threat, but that he provided a convenient pretext to get the oil in Iraq. But understand, the invasion of Iraq was also not just about the $3 to $5 trillion in oil or the $1.7 to $1.9 trillion occupation cost of Iraq over the next 5 years. It was also about setting the precedent for the New World Order to invade sovereign nations. And if you think there's some rift between Bush and the UN, Bush and Blair have already announced that the UN will control the oil, the trillions of dollars of oil that the Iraqi people truly own. So again, playing good cop, bad cop, and we have them on the record saying, think about this, that they were going to go after Iraq, they need a Pearl Harbor event to get the American people behind it. And the military-industrial complex, the CIA, certainly provided that on 9-1-1, September 11, 2001. But the New World Order also goes back into history. They orchestrated World War I, and they've bragged about it. And they tried to get their League of Nations, the first UN. When that failed, they needed a bigger war. And they certainly generated that with their asset, Adolf Hitler, who they funded and trained. In fact, I have the news articles out of large establishment East Coast newspapers from the early 1940s where the president's grandfather, George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, actually was arrested and fined for trading with the enemy, running over 50% of Nazi steel production through Brown Brother Harriman. In fact, a headline on MSNBC reported that FDR's Auschwitz secret, well, I'd talked to many B-17 pilots years ago who said they weren't allowed to bomb entire factories owned by General Motors, General Electric, and Ford building panzers for Hitler's war. Why did the globalists do this? Because the bankers were funding both sides and they stood to gain and profit from a protracted war. The bankers funded Stalin, Hitler, and the United States in England during World War II.
Adventure! and the West could have invaded Germany in 1942. But Churchill kept stalling for 2 years to ensure that the industrialists had greater profits. By 1943, the German generals knew that the war was lost, and they made repeated efforts to end the war on any honorable terms that they could. Now, they promised to keep the Soviets out of the Western Europe, and all of their efforts were perverted, discounted, and ignored. And Hitler had been right in claiming that the West wanted the Soviets in power and the total destruction of his Germany. National socialism was not the issue at all, regardless of press. Billions of dollars poured into financing the Allied armies and rebuilding Europe after the war. The profit went into the coffers of the elite internationalists, was financed by taxpayers of the West. Facing sure death at the hands of Soviets or giving a story to the British about what they wanted to hear, most of the Germans chose the latter. The generals told how evil Hitler and the Germans were bad and how brilliantly the Allies had fought, and only British translators were used in the Nuremberg trials. And if the story didn't fit what they wanted to hear, it never got in the books. And the Germans said that Italians and Negro troops were just worthless. And what they said was Eisenhower's abilities were mediocre, and the Soviet moral brutes, and the British bumblers, and the only man that they had anything good to say about was Patton. And they said he was great. And of course, none of this ever got in print. Well, Patton ran wild when he finally landed in Europe. He quickly bottled up several hundred thousand German troops, and he depended on Montgomery's British troops to close a 12-mile-wide gap. When he saw that the British were not moving, he would have closed the gap himself, but he was told to stay where he was again by Eisenhower. And to this day, official record books omit this true story of Kane. The British leaders and industrialists wanted Germany destroyed and the Soviets in charge of an empire. Germany simply wouldn't cooperate with the British elite and their world trade policies, and the Russian leaders were part of this elite. Several months before his death, Patton's compromising stand on the denazification of the Bavarian zone, which his troops occupied, cost him the commandership of the Third Army. Well, he was put into a paper army. He was known as the toughest as well as one of the most profane officers in the American forces. He maintained strictest discipline, and the Germans thought he was the most brilliant strategist general that we had. He was a good strategist and a patriotic soldier. He realized that if he held Prague, he would hold the key to European defense. And just before he arrived in Prague, the shocked Roosevelt and staff manipulators told him to stop at once and hand over this territory to the Russians. The Czechs in Prague pleaded. They wanted the West to let Patton liberate them. But evidently the powers influencing the war's policy wanted the Russians to gain control of this area. Patton was not happy about these and later events at all. And then a mysterious car crash later ended his life, and the events surrounding this accident, so-called, and the death certificate's validity are still questionable. Well, as we pointed out before, the Allied press constantly fanned hate propaganda against the Germans and the Japanese. They were continually depicted as inhuman monsters who committed unspeakable cruelties against civilians and prisoners. And to find the truth of the matter is very simple, however. European newspapers of the time show that the Jew hatred scenario was ridiculous. And the Germans were, generally speaking, gentlemen to the end. As an example, not one case of rape ever came to light in the famous Nuremberg trials. And on the other hand, historians will generally acknowledge that somewhere around 100,000 women were raped and abused in Vienna alone when the Russians, our allies, arrived there. There were thousands of children and women that were killed and committed suicide under the brutal hands of our Russian allies, and nowhere in the annals of history did such a mass rape of a captured people ever come to light before. It's estimated that at least 2 million women were put to work like slaves, and concubines, and violated and used during this period. And yet Americans heard nothing of this, and were on the other hand told of the inhuman Germans and their brutality. Well, documents prove that Germans could be executed for such violations to women under their regime and Hitler. Yet, our Jewish propaganda movies still crank out lies about what actually transpired then. And when television came along, even television cranked out the same scenario about how bad the Germans were. And Westerners never seemed to give second thought as to why millions of Russians and Eastern Europeans retreated with Hitler's defeated armies when they came back from Germany. The censors of the time dared not show the true problem. We can't seem to understand that Hitler's army was actually the liberating army for much of Europe. Little did people of the period know that most of the equipment used by the brutal Reds at the time had been produced in factories that they ran and had our USA stamp on it. From the first, America had never really wanted dealings with Russian communism, but simply couldn't stand up, evidently, against Roosevelt's propaganda and tactics. And just who is backing the brutal Soviets should be a question that more Westerners should ask. It isn't that difficult to find the truth. Shortly after World War II, we didn't send our equipment directly to the Reds. Our internationalists simply built them factories so they could build their own war equipment. And of course, today things are a little more sophisticated, and we worked little roundabout deals continually. And to supply these factories of Russia, we turned over all of the raw materials and wealth of Eastern Europe. And after Japan surrendered, we gave Stalin all of Manchuria, which was the industrial center of China, plus all of Japan's arms and supplies, which we left there. So what was back of all this betrayal and scheming by the persons to hold the purse strings of the world? Well, we know that many of the heads and leaders of the world's religions and governments and secret orders schemed together. Morgenthau, who was FDR's right-hand man, was a typical example. And here he's proposing the heaviest taxations against the United States that ever been known in the world's history. The Knights of Malta and other secret elite underground powers backed Franco in Spain, Mussolini in Italy, and Hitler in Germany, hoping that the rich Mother Russia would be captured and fall to the elite. When the Jews kept Russia, the plans shifted, of course. The high-level Nazi leaders and hundreds of top German aerospace experts were given top positions in the new military-industrial complex in the U.S. and other Western countries. It then became a high-stakes game between several competing international elitist powers. And the goal was to rule humanity and subject all Earthlings to the benevolent rulers who came out the victor in this little game. Because so much of the world's economies are in the hands of international financial manipulators, it's hard to see what actually takes place behind most politics. Arms salesmen sell millions of dollars worth of playthings to both sides of the war, and they manipulate the press as they pretty well please.
We'll be right back.
and never forgetting also that there is this other unseen hand that knows absolutely what consciousness is. We are experts in that fact. You're walking around couldn't care less. You're waiting for the next movie to come out and the next fashion and all that, what Hollywood's going to do next. But there's people there who have a thorough understanding of human consciousness, human psyche, human libido, and they're working on it 24/7 to feather their own nests and also to keep man in servitude, man whom they think is their creation. They think of man as just being one of their own, like somebody treats a pet. If you actually watch how people mostly treat their pets, when you really watch it, you'll find that the pet is a slave. Well, we have people ruling this society who think of human beings as pets and slaves. Yeah, they provide you with some food and they take you for a walk now and again, but they basically, you are a pet and you'll be told where to sit and where to go and what to do. That should be obvious to people by now. But these individuals don't really have any fear of us. Well, they do have fear of us to the extent that they know if we were awakened what we could do.
I'm deeply troubled that a very vague, emotionally stated, semi-theologically defined diagnosis of the central global menace is obscuring our national ability to comprehend the historically unprecedented challenge which is being posed in our time by a massive global political awakening, and thus is obstructing our ability to deal effectively with the global political turmoil that this awakening is generating.
So their motive of why they would want to dumb down people is also highly practical. Remember, these people are very, very practical. They may be evil, but they're also very practical. They know that you don't want a mass of intelligent, free-thinking, self-aware, proactive, deeply concerned, spiritually empowered people. That's the worst threat that they can imagine. So they have, it's very practical for them to keep people, one, what do they call it? One leash for one neck. Everybody in a complete sense of consent, with the illusion that they're independent. It doesn't work without that. You must absolutely have the illusion of independence and self-determination. And we have a problem then. We have a problem that to really, really be independent, to really be an individual, which in psychological terms is called individuation, that's difficult for most people. It's kind of tough. It requires work. It requires, to think and act in moral ways, and that's just too much trouble. I wish it was a halfway, stage. So the media goes, well, there is. We'll sell you the fashion of independence. You can buy into this. You can be a goth, a punk, you can be straight, you can be gay, you can be macho. We'll sell you all sorts of images to decorate your inauthentic life. And that will pacify you because there is a voice that's kind of screaming inside of you that you're not living an authentic life. We know that. We know that's a tough voice to live with. But you also can't really do anything about it because, you're lazy and you're weak. And you realize what you would have to sacrifice or lose if you really took the true moral way. The way of selfhood and the way of finding out who and what you are. We know that's difficult for you. So what we'll do is we'll manifest a bunch of simulacras. We have a whole industry creating false personas. But if you buy into that, and it's very easy to do that. I mean, it's just a matter of going down to the hairdresser and coloring your hair pink and wearing a couple of earrings and getting a few tattoos and, having a big t-shirt with anarchy written on it. But you're the last person who even understands what true freedom and anarchy is. But don't worry about that. The world is full of those kinds of people, isn't it? But do you see it as being any more free? If that was ever going to solve the world's problems, what happened in the 1960s when everybody was free, quote unquote? Where's the love now? Did it stop wars? Did it stop evil men ruling the world? Did it stop genocide? Did it stop the mutilation of animals and abattoirs? Tell me what one thing that the hippie movement or the punk movement of the 1970s achieved. Well, I'll tell you what they achieved. The leaders of the punk movement are living like pashas and maharajas in million-dollar houses over there in Bel Air and also in Los Angeles. Billy Idol has a fleet of Harley Davidsons. That's what happened. That's what happened. But they're wearing a hammer and sickle. We're for the people, peace and love, CND, all that shit. Utter nonsense. maybe the man from within who's completely incognito, who's working within the system, you know, suit and tie, you know, would never even pass him by on the street. Maybe those people will do more damage to the evil status quo than all those hordes screaming for reform, you know. Because it's not just a mass of people label reading, running away into these inauthentic models. It's a small group of educated people, dedicated, passionate, absolutely zero tolerance for the lie, who are from all walks of life, who have spiritually, most importantly, that they are spiritually adept, that they understand the what knowledge is. They have reverence for knowledge. They're not just trying to gain knowledge. Any idiot can do that. Gaining knowledge, well, God, schools are full of it. No. It's a matter of loving knowledge. That's a big difference. Loving knowledge, understanding what knowledge is a whole different thing than gaining knowledge. So there's these fine lines in all of this, very fine lines. And if the knowledge has to be empowering and changing you first, how can you do anything to change another world? Or maybe you don't even have the right. Maybe we're on the complete wrong subject matter altogether. How does anyone even think that they have a right to involve themselves in the life or the lifestyle of anyone else? If you really think about that, you'll find it's pretty preposterous. But at the same time, you do have the right to fix your own life. That, at least, we know is an absolute. You have the absolute right to work on your life. You have the right to make any of the choices that you want to make. So then my work sort of really focuses on that and doesn't stray from that. If it is true that the Illuminati, the child molesting priests, the Templars, and all of these people, what would we think if it is proven or found out that each and every one of these people has the perfect right to do what they are doing? And that you, in fact, have really no right to tell them or anyone else what to do. What happens if that turns out to be the spiritual law? And that the only thing that you have the right to do is to change your own life, regardless of what anybody else is doing. Well, then we have a problem, because the whole world is running around doing exactly the opposite. Everyone's running around fixing all of these other people and waving placards and getting reforms and getting to change this and do that, or we'll lock you up. And society will go through these cycles in which you have a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, a little bit of dark, a little bit of light. And yet the real work is about you taking care of your own house, your own garden. And if everybody did that, you know, unseen forces would come to aid. Man would, like Vernon Howard said, we can accept that God can become man to save man, but we can't accept that man can become God to save himself. It's one of the most powerful statements I've ever heard. And so what is that dependency in human beings that makes them refute that? Of course, we know that everyone listening to the sound of my voice is going to refute that. No, it's Jesus who's meant to do it. Muhammad, Allah, what are you talking? Oh, that's all that humanist stuff. Man being his own God. Oh, satanic evil. So we already know that, you know, that's not a common hell theory. But wait a minute. What then is the motive that makes people refute that statement? Before we get into what they're into, you're a Christian, why would you feel motivated to not accept that man is his own savior? I'm very interested in that. I'm very interested in as to why you, not the cult, not the clan, not your guru, why you would, you know, have a problem with that. What's in your psychology that has made you in the 20 years of your life, or the 25 years of life, or the 40 years of your life, not have enough brain cells to realize, my God, that's the bottom line? Because in my opinion, if you don't accept that, you are an insane person. You're not insane, you're unsane. You're toxic, and you need to be quarantined or something. That's really the long and short of it, in my opinion. Then I want to get the crucifix out. As soon as I hear that somebody is, thinking that another authority, another person, has the rights over their mental and emotional and attitudinal and psychic life, I'm worried about that person. Because I know that person has got some very serious psychological and existential problems. Right off the bat. Then that person is going to be, a herd, part of some herd, or will be a controller of a herd, or will be manipulated by the herd, or whatever you want to call it. But that person is not going to end ever. You're never going to find that person, you know, in doing good in the world, real necessary good at all. It's just a contradiction in terms. It's impossible. They may be sold the illusion or the delusion that they're doing wonderful work. Yeah. because they give to Live Aid or the next stupid charity that pops up out of the woodwork, you know. They were there. Great, you were there, yeah. Well, we had Live Aid, didn't we? When was that, 1982 or something? You know, did the world get any better? No, all that happened is Bono and Geldof got on their best clothes one day and walked off down there to Buckingham Palace, got on their bony knees, and said, thank you, Mom, for their little award. Okay, that's what happened. And their kids will go to good schools, and they will have, you know, million-dollar hotels, and they'll have the best time of it, because they're sellouts. They're people who sold out or were already working for this cult of Dionysus. People's champions in order to lead you away, just like in the Monty Python Meaning of Life. Follow Andre, the waiter. He's got something to show you, so you go up down some streets.
Over here.
Up some alleyways.
Come on.
Through a bunch of parks.
There by me, huh?
Take you on a 15-minute tour.
Nearly there now.
To show you something.
See that?
It leaves you up in an empty field.
Much of a philosophy, I know. Fuck you.
And then gets angry with you.
Fuck off.
You don't think it's very much.
Don't come following me.
Yeah. So keep on following Andre. That's what every guru, every priest, every politician is telling you. It's all tomorrow. Every scientist, you're going to have it tomorrow. You're going to have it tomorrow. You can't have it today. Because we don't live in the now. We live in tomorrow's world. Tomorrow doesn't even their own science proves it doesn't. Tomorrow doesn't exist, but they're going to tell you it all exists in tomorrow. So the fundamental line is discover that there's a hidden hand, mind controlling the world, operating to keep you down. Understand that you are a participant in that because you are allowing those hooks into your flesh. I've said it many times, and I said it recently, said it last year, you must distinguish the difference between saying, have I been sold a lie? And the difference between, yeah, but have I bought a lie? Because there's all the difference in the world attitudinally between those two statements. You are being sold a lie. But that's the perfect right of that salesman to sell you a lie. The universal force doesn't care about that. Universal force's judgment, you know, field is not really operating on that frequency at all. The judgment field, the whole spiritual ball of wax begins based on whether or not you bought that lie. That's the clause, that's the nuance, that's the difference. It's a no different a rule than anything that applies when you're shopping downtown. I can't even think of how it would be different. You know, this person prefers Gucci over, you know, Versace. This person likes the Levi's over Wrangler. They have the right to sell you whatever they feel like. They have the right to even believe what they feel like. You know, somebody likes cappuccino, somebody else likes, what, latte, mocha, right? Choice must be there. The decision is yours. But where the real moral component comes in is what you bought. And what you put your energy into, and what you gave in exchange for what you bought. And if man is not in inner harmony or tuned correctly, he's going to create chaotic noise. If a guitar isn't tuned properly, don't expect it to play well. It's going to be in discord, and it will create chaotic sounds. So the bottom line comes in, but how are you tuned? How are you tuning your inner instrument, your consciousness? As I said, the alternative to that is to not tune it, but then hang out with a whole symphony of likewise untuned people, so you can all believe you're cool. In fact, you can say, no, this is a radical new form of avant-garde music we're playing here. It's real hip, it's real cool, all this chaos. In fact, this chaos is really true. This chaos is the ultimate form of music. But that's just you mind-controlling yourself into believing that your chaos is order. And unfortunately, there are very toxic people in the world who don't like order. They want chaos. Because they feel good in that chaos, and you're providing it for them. No human being who is in their center can be hypnotized. That's what needs to be remembered. No human being who is in their center, who is being guided, who is close to their intuition, who's a sharp critical apparatus, who's got a sharp sense of judgment, can ever be manipulated. Not for any permanent or lasting length of time. You know, they can be diluted temporarily perhaps, but you know, it's like a muscle you have to keep on working on, a muscle you have to keep on sharpening, like anything. And I really believe that a lot of the obstacles and challenges and you know, tragedies that are occurring in the world, that's what this is for. This is the grinder. This is the thing that's sharpening the blades of intelligent people, you know, You have to have friction. I'm sorry. It just happens. You can't sharpen an axe or a beautiful blade without that grinder, without that sharpening apparatus and the friction that's caused in the and the mechanics of that. So it's the same way with sharpening consciousness. You must have this whetstone of the world in order to sharpen your mind and sharpen your consciousness so that you come to see, you know, some of the meaning in all of this. And it's ultimately a discovery of your own self. It's not about a discovery of society or other people. All of it is a discovery of who and what you are, ultimately.
Oh, a paradise with a ruler running it was the goal. And the problem, of course, come on, when you figure out just who these leaders will be. This domination game never seems to end, and there are very few citizens of the world who are standing up. Very few vented their displeasure before World War II. Very few are standing up to the system today. Almost due. And we citizens, of course, are apprehensive about all this, but very few of us ever take any actions, true actions. And as this production is completed in the mid-80s, the military-industrial complex has us pointed toward a final battle for humanity and her freedom. And America's lost virtually 80% of our constitutional freedoms, and most of us aren't even aware of it. It's the same old story. And as we're slowly brought into greater control, there are now several scenarios open to us. First, it may happen that the internationalists just can't balance things enough to where they can sell all their war materials to each country without having the situation explode on them and get out of hand. So we might have an accidental war that'll destroy us all. Secondly, we could have a one-world system with one of the elite's favored rulers forcing out all competition. And third, as unlikely as it may seem, we could have humanity rising up against the dominion systems here to face them and face their responsibilities and create the paradise based on choice and the golden rule that all the spiritual teachers said we could have if we made it.